It's Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. Last fall, the Seattle-based Mars Hill Megachurch opened its first outpost in Portland. It shows an empty church building in the Sunnyside neighborhood. Mars Hill is led by Mark Driscoll, who's attracted national attention for some of his comments about homosexuality, gender roles, and Mormonism. That reputation led some Portlanders, including members of the city's sexual minority community, to protest Mars Hill's arrival. The Q Center, which calls itself Portland's LGBTQ Community Center, took a different tack. It quietly joined a series of conversations with church members. Both sides have stressed the importance of a civil dialogue. So both sides were upset last week when a group that identified itself as Angry Queers broke some of the church's 100-year-old stained glass windows. Are you a member of the church or of Portland's LGBT community? Have you been affected by the recent vandalism? Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. I'm joined right now by two of the men at the heart of this, what I guess it's fair to call it a private dialogue so far. Tim Smith is a lead pastor at the Mars Hill Church, Portland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Logan Lin is Public Relations and Innovations Manager for the Q Center. Logan Lin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the vandalism. Tim Smith, what was your first response when you heard about the windows being smashed?
Yeah, my first response was, I was saddened by that. The church is off to a big start. It's a really busy season, and I was actually trying to take a couple days away to get a little break and got a call early in the morning that had happened, and that's never a call anybody wants to receive. But at the same time, we don't wish those who did this any ill will, and it's sad that some people feel like they have to resort to an act of violence to be heard. But the church is not a building; it's a people, and so broken glass doesn't really hinder us from our message and from our mission, which is to tell people about Jesus. That's what we're here for.
Broken glass. It's also something that has to be fixed, though.
Yes. I mean,
how much is it going to cost? Do you know?
Well, people rallied pretty quickly and replaced all the kind of simple plain glass. Some of the stained glass is more complicated, and we are in the process of getting bids for that range, somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000 or so like that. And some people have even come forward very graciously that have some old stashes of some old stained glass here in town to give and donate if that would help. And so it's been cool to see the community respond a bit in that way.
Logan, what was your first response when you first heard about it?
Oh, I was frustrated and sad. We've taken at Q Center and me personally a nonviolent approach to sort of establish this civil dialogue. So rocks through windows has never been a part of that plan. And I was sad. I basically rushed over to the church to help clean up and just make sure that there was an immediate distinction between these people that had done that and at least me from the LGBT community.
How did your conversations first start?
I would say that when Mars Hill was arriving, because of my position over at Q Center, people tend to reach out to me for comment. They did. I think it was the Oregonian first and asked me how I would handle their arrival. And I said sort of off the cuff, I would reach out and try to make friends. And at the time, didn't really think anything was going to come of that.
Why did you say that as your first response?
Why did I say that at the time?
Yeah.
Well, because that's generally my response with anyone who's moving into the community. You know, part of Q Center is to be a good neighbor and to sort of reach out to people that are different than us or and try to build allies wherever we can. So that's generally my response.
And you didn't think that you'd get a yes, let's make friends?
I didn't think it would necessarily happen. Yeah, I didn't think my reaching out would bring the Mars Hill Church over to Q Center, and it did.
So, Tim, from your perspective, going back, this is, I guess, in the end of the summer, beginning of the fall of last year. What did you – when Logan said let's be friends or let's let's try to start a friendship. What was your response?
Yeah, we had just closed on a building right at the very end of August, and that touched off a lot of attention that I didn't necessarily expect. Our church hadn't really even launched yet, and yet there was quite a response. And so, in the middle of all this, I was a bit shell shocked, and I read Logan's gracious comments in the Oregonian, it felt like it was the right thing to do to take him up on that. His words were, you know, I'd like to extend an olive branch, and if they want to learn more about who we are and what we do, you know, we'd be happy to talk. And so I reached out, and I believe it was the week after Labor Day, came by with one of my coworkers, and we toured the Q Center and asked a lot of questions, and started a conversation that I think neither one of us necessarily expected.
What kinds of questions did you ask when you toured the center?
I asked I wanted to know what they did. And so I asked a lot about, you know, practically what the Q Center does, why it exists, who they reach out to, who they serve. And then I asked, you know, some more personal stuff like when you hear about a church like Mars Hill, from whatever you perceive that to be, coming to town, how does that make you feel? How does that what experiences does that bring up from your past? And I heard stories of pain and stories of abuse and stories of rejection in different ways. And regardless of my beliefs, I want to hear that. And so for me, it was the beginning of a process of putting a lot more of a human face on a group that, I mean, evangelicals and the greater LGBTQ community, they don't often talk. They tend to be satisfied with the most ignorant and inflammatory caricatures of one another without ever pushing past that. And so that was the kind of first baby step in a series of steps, I think, to move past some of that.
So Logan, Tim is talking about, among other things, finding out people's stories and you know, their experiences that would lead them to in terms of their beliefs about perhaps, let's call it, the other side, for lack of a sure. better, shorter phrase.
Yeah.
So what was
We're always looking for phrases.
So what is your personal history, say, with the evangelical church?
Sure. Well, I mean, I was raised in the Midwest. My father was a pastor in a very conservative evangelical home. And so my history personally was one of great hurt and rejection, like Tim said, which has sort of led me into this activist role in the first place. I think part of what
Can I ask how old you were when you came out to your family?
I was 14.
And what was their response?
You know, it wasn't great. It was like a lot of LGBT youth and young adults experience, particularly in religious homes. You know, it was a lot of talk of sin and, you know, my parents, I think, were doing their best given what they believed at the time. But it wasn't good enough for me to feel human and loved and accepted or celebrated. So, you know, it sent me into a tailspin for years with drugs and alcohol and just sort of, you know, the reaction to who I was internally and how it was being received externally. You know, it led me down this road to try to change that experience for future generations of queer kids. And so I guess when this all started, that initial conversation, we talked about LGBT suicide and bullying and these things that I had personally experienced. And it was, I think, eye-opening on both sides. I didn't expect him to be so curious.
Well, so Tim mentioned, you know, that he thinks that perhaps both sides came in with a caricatured version of what the other
Definitely.
Side, who it was, what they believed. What was your version of Tim? Or if not Tim, I mean, now Tim is an individual, but, yeah. but, you know, someone like Tim.
Well, all I had known of Tim or Mars Hill was what was on their website, right? So I had gone in and looked at the videos, the media on their website, and had done just a little bit of research. And normally, I think I would have been okay with stopping there. But because he was willing to engage, you know, we met face to face. And
wait, but so, but before we get to this, this person as an individual, because a lot can change when you actually sit down month after month with somebody.
Totally.
Who did you think this church was?
Well, I don't think I was making a distinction between this church and the church I grew up in. So part of that, you know, I'll be honest, part of that initial like meeting from my perspective was also just to say, look, we see you. You've arrived in our community. And we're here too, or something. You know, it wasn't necessarily let's make friends.
It was more confrontational.
It was more here's where we are and here's what we believe. And
people can't see, but you're taking your fists and sort of putting them down a little bit.
I mean, I am.
Okay.
It was based in an assertive.
We're not going
place.
Anywhere kind of a
yeah.
of a
– Yeah.
And Tim, from your perspective, I mean you – I heard you – you know, you use the LGBTQ acronym very fluidly right now. Is that a phrase you would have used before? I mean what was your understanding of the gay or the sexual minority, whatever you want to call it, community?
Yeah. I think a lot of people tend to view the average evangelical Christian like the most extreme edge of the church, like something like maybe Westboro Baptist, so that all evangelical Christians are into waving "God hates fags" signs at funerals and these kind of things. And then Christians can slip into a very adversarial thing to where they start to picture the whole gay community as like the folks that threw rocks through our windows and then be kind of content to just throw kind of holy hand grenades at one each other from afar. And so, you know, even when I came in just asking more questions, trying to learn because I'm a naturally curious person. I like to learn about everything. I want to know people's stories. You know, one of the very first things I learned was even just in terminology that members of the greater gay community push back on the term homosexual because it's reductionistic to just deal with sexual acts, where they would describe themselves as much more of a it's not just a sexual orientation, it's much more complicated. It goes much deeper down to identity. So instead of a conversation about sexual acts, we end up in conversations about identity and who are you in the deepest part of who you are, which is a conversation that I'm in all the time as a pastor, and trying to challenge people to be defined in the deepest part of who they are by Jesus.
Does that change though? I mean, that sounds like you're learning how to talk and think and interact in a way that maybe makes, you know, Logan was nodding as you were talking about, that makes Logan more comfortable perhaps.
Yeah.
Does that get to anything about your theology? Does it change your understanding of the Bible or of you know, your understanding of God's word?
Yeah, I would say my core beliefs about what sin is and isn't have not fundamentally changed. But what I have found as I've gotten to know more people from the LGBT community is that some of my assumptions were very reductionistic, and it's much more complicated. And I think many Christians are reticent to even wade into those waters to wrestle with larger issues of gender and sexuality and desires and these kind of things. But I got convicted that there was kind of a double standard because I'm willing to wade into those waters and with just about everybody else. So why wouldn't I if what I believe is true, then it's true regardless of whatever situation I find myself in.
You're listening to Think Out Loud on OPB. We're talking right now about the relationship between the Mars Hill Church and Portland's gay community. We want to know how these ongoing discussions have affected you or what you hear in the conversation right now. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. Mary on our site asks, beyond catchphrases about bridge building and tolerance, is the end goal to convince Mars Hill congregants that their interpretation of the Bible is wrong? Logan, I think that's a question for you.
Sure. Well, we set the whole thing up, both Tim and I, with no end goal in mind. The goal was to get to know each other better. And it's been kept very open intentionally. I'm sure everybody involved in the small group process, including Tim and I, have their own sort of, you know, high dreams about what they want to see happen. But
well, what are your high dreams? Just speaking personally,
my high dreams in getting involved were to make it, you know, make the experience of LGBT people that Tim might find in his congregation, kids, queer kids coming out at the same age that I was coming out, make it a safer environment, you know, so to talk about what that really means, what that experience really is.
Do you think you've done that?
Oh, I think we're doing it. Yeah, I think that it's an ongoing process. But I do think there's an understanding on both sides, a more clear understanding of what the experience is.
So Tim, on that exact point, I mean, if Logan, you said you were 14 when you came out to your family,
yep,
who was also, you know, your pastor.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense for as a direct result of your conversations with Logan and others, how you would treat a 14-year-old boy or girl in your congregation if they came out to you, how you would treat them differently, if you would treat them differently now?
As opposed to before all this
as
happened?
As opposed to before you sat down with Logan and, you know, and met once a month or so.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm more aware of issues. I'm more aware of the condition of what it means in our society, in our current culture, to deal with that, the stresses and the issues. And I would hope that would give me more of a sense of empathy and compassion to work through that process with them, you know, whatever that outcome is.
Where does that empathy and compassion lead, though?
You mean what's the end result of that?
Yeah. Or? I mean, in other words, would you still tell them that what they are doing or what they say they'd like to do is wrong, is sinful, will lead to hell?
I would reconcile, because this is what a pastor does. They reconcile what they believe the Bible says with where people are at. And I do believe that the Bible teaches that sexuality is meant for marriage between a man and a woman. And so that fundamental belief for me has not changed. But what I have in the same way as all my friendships have influenced how I would befriend and lead people towards understanding Jesus. Because first and foremost, I'm not trying to get at people with just a different expression of sexuality. I'm looking to introduce people to Jesus Christ, that they would be followers and disciples of His. And then be changed from the inside out in a lot of different ways. And so this would change a lot of the process of that discipleship, if you will, for me, with the end result being the same thing that I call everybody to follow Jesus.
I understand that everything would be dependent on, you know, where that 14-year-old mm-hmm. is. But can you give us a sense of you know, the actual language, what you might say exactly to that 14-year-old?
Yeah, what I would say is that you are deeper than – you are more than simply your desires, and we are all born with desires that take us in different directions. And desires as an end in themselves are not all inherently good. And so the Christian life, as the reformer Martin Luther said, is all one of repentance, where we are surrendering our will to the will of God and following Jesus and being remade to be more like Him and share that with others. And so it's not a denial of desires, but it's also not making those desires your God. And that's what I would say to someone who was identifying as LGBT, or someone who is identifying as a liar, or someone who is identifying as really struggling with worshiping their desire for any kind of relationship. It's constantly trying to shepherd and gently lead people towards being followers of Jesus.
Logan?
Yeah.
Do you feel – I mean, you were saying you feel like you've succeeded. You feel like you've changed the way Tim might deal with you if you were a 14-year-old again.
I'm not sure that I feel like I've changed that. I feel like that's what we're working toward. That's my high dream around
it. So what did
I mean, obviously, we totally disagree. Yeah. You know, like
maybe it's obvious, well, but because, just to spell
know,
it
to
out.
Equate part of my identity on the same level as being a liar, for instance, or an adulterer, or, you know, these are part of the conversations that we have. The whole thing is set up because we disagree on a fundamental level. And so, you know, that's where I get into, like, I'm not really sure what the end result will be or what the changes are. But I know that Tim and the other people in the group have at least seen us as human and have heard our experience just as we've heard theirs. So, you know, that's where I'm not sure where this is all headed necessarily. And I don't know that Tim is either. But the idea that because we disagree on these things, we mustn't speak to one another is where I think we both totally disagree with that angle.
And that's what we got from Watch and See on our site, who says, glad to see two sets of folks that are often content with the caricatures they have of each other finally work at knowing each other and even working together. What an unlikely but highly encouraging friendship. I don't care what each side believes, right or wrong, popular or unpopular. The fact that they're talking and working at friendship shows me that they are bigger people than the hate mongers on both sides. We've got a lot more coming up from Logan Lynn and Tim Smith. We got to take a quick break. We're also going to hear after the break from the president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. This is Think Out Loud. I'm Dave Miller. If you're just joining us, we've been talking today about the relationship between the Mars Hill Church and members of Portland's LGBT community. The church has been in Portland since last fall. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. Matt has called in from Portland. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good to be on. I have a question for the pastor. I was just curious as to whether or not he eats shellfish.
Why do you want to ask this question?
Well, Leviticus says that eating shellfish is an abomination before God, just as Leviticus says that a man should not lie with another man. So obviously they're on the same par, and so I find it interesting that he holds this belief that you cannot be gay and be Christian. You cannot, you know, live as a homosexual, that procreation is the only means of sexuality, and it does not say that anywhere in the Bible. So I'm just curious. It seems to me that he's picking and choosing. Obviously, one abomination is no more or no better than another. And so I find it interesting that homosexuality has fallen within his crosshairs, yet I'm just curious as to whether or not he eats shellfish.
Matt, we got it. Thanks very much. I should note that Oregon Bill on our site had a similar point. He went further. He talked about shellfish, slavery, dinner, farming, menstruation, virginity, masturbation, all not necessarily all from Leviticus, but it sounds like classic Leviticus kind of stuff.
It does, yeah.
I mean, but so Matt's question is basically how do you decide what parts of the Bible to adhere to?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge question that we could get into. I mean, it's a whole field of study called hermeneutics. And in a real general way, specifically on the issue of Leviticus, I think that there's a difference between dietary restrictions that the Bible specifies as part of Old Testament law and New Testament life in Christ. And we believe that that law is fulfilled in Jesus, and those particularly dietary restrictions of shellfish or pork and the like are not still on us as believers, but now we're called to live a life in and through and by the life of Jesus Christ. And our basis for what we believe is sin in, sexually is drawn from much more than Leviticus.
Logan, I feel like there's a parallel question for you, which is,
I love shellfish.
That would be the exact
question. I love oysters. Yes.
What I'm wondering is if you've taken the time to have these kinds of conversations with other existing churches in town. I'm wondering, you know, about, you know, the Archbishop of Portland or the Albina Ministerial Alliance. The Q Center is, you know, is in North Portland, right in
sure.
the heart of the historically African American part of Portland. Mm-hmm. So you're spending a lot of time with Tim, a pastor of a relatively, you know, a new arrival here. Mm-hmm. But what about there are other religiously conservative churches right
sure.
in Portland?
Yeah, we've met with them as well. Not necessarily the ones you just listed, but over the past 6 months, I've met with five of the major mega church leaders as well as city officials. It's part of our mission at Q Center and my personal mission as a queer activist to engage in dialogue with our allies within the community and with those who oppose us or would do us harm. It's front and center at the mission. So the answer to that is yes. We take these things one step at a time. And frankly, I don't create a media spectacle over every meeting that I take. This one was created for us. And so it gets a lot more attention.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets more attention. That doesn't mean that it isn't just one piece of the pie.
Ruben Däumling joins us right now. He's the president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. He's also a self-employed energy consultant. Ruben, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what issues you were most focused on and other folks in the neighborhood were most focused on when you heard that Mars Hill was moving to the neighborhood?
Well, there was the first reaction, which I have to say was unfortunately made up of a fair amount of mistrust and intolerance of what was perceived to be intolerance. And that was the immediate set of reactions that spilled into the newspapers. No different really here than around the general area. But we sat down pretty quickly as well with Tim and his fellow pastor Ryan and had really good conversations. We've found them to be very reasonable, very willing to engage in dialogue, talk about admittedly much more prosaic issues like parking and potential for noise complaints and just dealing with the fact that this had been a very quiet, pretty much empty church for a while, and people around the block, the neighborhood, had gotten used to that. And the prospect of this becoming a big thing on Sundays got wrapped up in the mistrust and anger about what people thought this might represent culturally or in terms of their feeling safe in the neighborhood.
Are you saying that even the question of parking, as you say, you know, and other sort of prosaic things like that, took on even a heightened significance because of the cultural issues that started?
Well, I think, and I'm not proud of this at all, but I think people mixed it all up. And I think people were afraid of or worried about or concerned about any number of things we've just mentioned. And we, as the Neighborhood Association, tried to pull out some of the things that we felt legitimately we could deal with. And parking and noise and communication were the three things that we tried to peel away from more contentious things. And definitely we tried to calm people down over their heightened anxieties because, to me personally, it didn't seem like we should jump the gun here and assume that the world is going to end.
So we're here. We are still here, happily. So what have the last, 7, 8, 9 months been like?
I've talked to a bunch of neighbors and also sort of here generally about how things are going. And I think a couple things I'll say. One, the protests, such as I've heard of them, haven't come from neighbors. I think the neighbors have had a pretty easy time differentiating themselves, and I mean immediate neighbors too, people who live across the street or next door, from those who have protested in various ways, online as well as in actual fact. Secondly, we have negotiated a good neighbor agreement. We haven't signed it, but we're close. I don't think any remaining disagreements. And everybody tells me that Mars Hill has been actually a really good neighbor. I mean, there's some small qualifications. There is a lot of traffic on Sundays, and the band practice sometimes starts a little early. But in terms of being accommodating, having really substantive and in some cases really thoughtful strategies and protocols for dealing with the anticipation of sound and extra parking, that's really worked out well. And I think people generally, though they may disagree theologically, and most happen to, on the pragmatic level, things have really been great. I have not heard much in the way of substantive complaints, a couple of little issues every now and then, but on the whole, they have been good to work with, very respectful and aware of the kinds of issues one might expect to arise, given that this is a very dense neighborhood. Lots are very small. Most people don't have driveways. And so the square footage out in front of people's houses is a turf that people watch closely who have cars.
Ruben Däumling, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben.
That's Ruben Däumling, president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. Logan Lynn, How much flack have you gotten from members of the LGBTQ community?
It's been for this kind of conversation. Sure. It's been a mixed bag. From the time that it started, there's been a lot of community support, a lot of people who think what we're doing is great. There's also been people that think what I'm doing and what Q Center has embarked on with this community, they think we're traitors, and they're angry about just even talking to people who they feel so hurt by historically, which, you know, I understand. I think that anger and hurt is shared by me. This dialogue is a tactic. It was a move to try to make the world a safer place for queer people everywhere. And that, you know, I understand that reaction.
How has this changed you?
Well, I've had to do a lot of work on myself in order to even have the dialogues. I hadn't entered a church building since I had been kicked out of the last one. So even just going to Mars Hill was transformative in that, you know, a letting go of kind of my personal pain around it in order to sort of talk to these people who also, you know, even though Tim hadn't specifically been the one that had hurt me as a young person or all through my life, he stood for something that had and continues to. So that it's made me braver. I've had to deal with some, you know, within the community, the idea that I'm not a queer person or I'm not radical. You know, what we're both doing is radical. Being a radical queer for me looks like this right now.
As opposed to throwing a brick through a window.
Yeah, that word radical is defined in many different ways in my mind. And so I think if people could really see what's going on in there and just how hard it is, that would be applied.
Tim Smith, we have 45 seconds left. How has it changed you?
I think that it's always good to find common ground with folks. Jesus said that all of the Old Testament law can be summed up in the idea of loving God above all else and loving your neighbor. And this is a way to work that out. We want more people to know Jesus, and they're not going to know Jesus if everything that the people who follow him stand for seems contrary to him.
Logan, do you feel like Tim loves you?
I think on some human level, he totally does. Yeah, as a person, he respects me and does love me.
Let's leave it there for today. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
It's Tim Smith, lead pastor at Mars Hill Church in Portland, and Logan Lynn, public relations and innovations manager for the Q Center. If you miss any part of the show, download the show at opb.org/thinkoutloud. There's our rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. There's also our podcast. So this show will go directly to your computer. Tomorrow, we're going to talk, as I mentioned, about new research looking into the genetic origins of autism. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Dave Miller. Have a great Monday.